all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. For this Thursday, January 26th, coming up this hour, Senator Tammy Baldwin talking to us about mental health care access that she's fighting for in Congress to help folks in Wisconsin. Timothy Johnson, a CRNA, will help us appreciate the role of certified registered nurse anesthetists.
Good work,
Johnson. Thank you. And that's all thanks to the helpfulness of that voice right there, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Timothy Johnson will be part of our weekly hometown health segment, but Dr. Lyerly, an OBGYN based in Green Bay, joins us now. Hello.
Hello and good morning.
I hold you responsible for not being able to get that second cup of coffee because usually on these long commercial breaks, we take care of coffee and other matters. Instead, we were just prattling on, you know, like hens on the farm. And so consequently, that's why the Coke Zero is coming out just a little bit earlier today. I couldn't make another pot of coffee.
Sorry, Pat. I also didn't wake my kid up for school and I don't know.
Do you want to give a shout? If you want to shout right now, I think the listeners would like to hear that.
It's Lindsay, wake up, Lindsay. I don't know. I'm not feeling hopeful.
I'm really hoping that there's a Lindsay in the audience someplace who just reacted to that mom voice.
Who knows? You might have saved someone's life who was driving on the highway, nodding off a little bit.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be. 844.
Oh, he made it.
See? Fantastic.
He looks a little frazzled, but he's going to make it. It's good.
Mom. 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. All right. Let's talk about the state of the state and the state of the other state. And in talking about the state of the other state, I'm going to go over to Michigan, which now has a Democratic-controlled legislature and a second term for Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And her state of the state was yesterday, where she talked about prioritizing stricter gun laws, repealing outdated laws that restrict abortion and who one can marry, and providing pre-K education for all four-year-olds in the state. Whitmer's fifth state of the state also included a pledge to help with rising costs through immediate tax relief. That also includes an increased earned income tax credit and a repeal of the retirement tax. A little different, Kristen, than what we were having to deal with over here.
I hear her saying, I look to the future and I'm cutting taxes. And what we were dealing with were a bunch of snoozing Republicans who were just angry and saying things that were just old-fashioned, overused tropes.
Just cliches. Now Michigan has a $9 billion surplus because of the way that their Democratic governor has provided leadership. Minnesota has, I believe, a $16 billion surplus with Democratic Governor Tim Walz and now a Democratic legislature. And we learned yesterday the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has once again increased the estimate of Wisconsin's budget surplus to $7.1 billion. And yet again, unlike those things that are probably going to happen in Michigan, we will probably spend a lot of time in Wisconsin watching the legislature spin its wheels. Because you listen to the speech, I listen to the speech, and we know what the governor wants to do, but I'm not hearing much in the response that indicates there's going to be any attempt to meet in the middle.
The response didn't have anything to do with the speech. No. The speech was, there were so many good things, and I loved the commitment to shared revenue that the governor discussed, because that has been a huge problem for so many years. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that in all of our municipalities across the state.
And on top of that, we got a nice moment of humanity that Kristen wanted to hear again when the governor got a little mixed up on his script talking about a small business in Fond du Lac called Edith's Bridal and Tuxedo in Fondy. And here's how it came out.
Some things haven't changed much over the years, like Edith's right downtown in Fondy, where Kathy bought her first wedding, or her wedding, not her first wedding dress. Her first and last wedding dress, I hope. Good Lord.
poor guy.
I love it. But, you know, my favorite thing about that is Governor Evers is just who he is. He's such an authentic person who really just cares. He doesn't have a hidden agenda. He's just trying to do his best. And I think that that clip really shows just what a wonderful human being he is.
And then, again, the contrast, and we're going to talk about this more with Senator Baldwin coming up, but for him to spend so much time talking about mental health care, and that the answer from Republicans, well, from Speaker Robin Voss, was that's not going to happen. And then Stephen Thorson commented on Twitter. He says, quote, "It's honestly unbelievable that the official GOP position is Democrats destroyed school children during COVID, and I oppose spending a single dollar to fix that." Mm-hmm. Because again, they assess blame, but then they block the things. So even if you were to agree, which I don't, you know, that mental health issues were increased solely because of COVID safeguards, but even if that's your position, why wouldn't you want to help those kids and all of those people? But again, the answer is always no.
They're not into helping. They're into finger pointing and fear mongering and confusing, and we deserve better.
Oh, without a doubt. Timothy Johnson is going to join us next to talk about CRNAs, the role that they play in hometown health, which is the segment coming up. And then after that, we will talk to Senator Tammy Baldwin more about mental health and the fight to restore women's health care rights. All that and more on a Thursday on Up North News Radio. It's my own little wish for the Republican legislature that they would just stop talking and actually get some things done for Wisconsin. And some of those things were outlined last night by Governor Tony Evers in the State of the State address. There was a Republican response that, again, was a whole lot of talk and helping us break it all down. State Senator Brad Paff from La Crosse. Good to see you again. How are you,
hey,
Senator?
Thank you, Pat. It's great to be with you. And good morning, listeners.
Yeah, it's good to be here to talk a bit about the things that could be getting done for the state. Senator Paff, we thought maybe after the election that after the voters had spoken and said that in the non-gerrymandered districts that they would like some more moderation, they'd like some more cooperation. Republicans almost kind of sort of talked about that in the immediate aftermath of the election. And yet, after everything that the governor outlined, the first thing that Speaker Robin Voss said was, "I assume most of these are dead on arrival." I assume you think that's not helpful.
Yeah, that's not helpful at all, Pat. I mean, what we heard from the governor last night was something that the voters of this state have been asking for. And that is, they've been talking about the needs to make sure that we continue to provide a tax relief for hardworking middle-class residents, clean water, addressing child care deserts, making sure that our K-12 public schools from Wisconsin Rapids to Richland Center and everyone in between, you know, that has the adequate dollars, workforce development issues. These are issues that are common sense, bipartisan issues that the voters of this district have spoken on over and over again. And the governor addressed that last night. And rather than actually having a conversation about how we can move forward on these topics, the Speaker of the Assembly stated that it's dead on arrival. What's dead on arrival? The request of the people of this state. I thought the governor's address last night was bold. He definitely moved the ball forward when it comes to providing revenue for our local units of government so we can have, you know, safe communities. He talked about tax reform for middle-class working adults here. But at the same time, you know, he's reaching out, providing an olive branch, and to have, you know, the leader in the assembly say that everything is dead on arrival. I don't quite know what's going on here. It's unfortunate.
And then he went on to add something on social media, in response to the governor saying that 2023 should be the year of mental health, making the Get Kids Ahead program permanent, spending about $500 million to expand access to mental and behavioral health services, efforts to reduce suicides and other mental health related issues, $270 million of that directed toward expanding school-based mental health services to kids. And somebody reacted to it, and Voss reposted it with the words, quote, not going to happen. I mean, what does that say about Republicans thinking about the mental health issues that affect kids? And as you know, farmers, you and the Republicans have butted heads about mental health services there too. You're as well positioned as anybody to talk about the Republican position on caring for the state of mental health for their constituents.
And Pat, I just can't believe that such a response would come from the leader, for the simple reason is this. If you speak with law enforcement, they will tell you that the jails are full. And the thing is that we have to address mental health issues in this state. If you speak with Chamber of Commerce, they talk about the fact that they're trying to their businesses are trying to find employees. And again, we have to address this mental health issue in this state. When it comes to K-12 education, we recognize the fact that our children are hurting right now, and we need to make sure that we provide the kind of resources that are needed in order to make sure that you know, our children continue to grow and they can succeed. I just don't understand, you know, why you would push back on something like mental health. This is something that does not discriminate between rural or urban. It doesn't discriminate based upon gender. It doesn't discriminate based on economics. I mean, the thing is, mental health is impacting residents in this state, quite frankly, residents in this country. And, you know, the more that we can do in order to try and, you know, provide the assistance, that'll help as far as we going forward, educating our students, growing our economy, making sure that we got a workforce that is prepared to move forward.
And going back to the law enforcement angle for a moment, again, what we're seeing is a continuation of what happened a couple of years ago after a rash of police violence, when there was talk about having more instances of mental health workers be able to try to ward off things that needed, you know, an armed response to them. And instead of providing more resources for mental health that way, folks were accused of trying to defund the police, completely perverting, you know, the notion of what needs to be done for mental health care out there. Let's see if I can find one area of bipartisan agreement. Maybe. The governor talked for a little while about clean water and about PFAS, about industrial chemicals that have been getting into the water. You know this very well from French Island in your area. Everybody has bottled water out there. He talked about spending $100 million to combat that pollution, increase testing, sampling, and monitoring statewide. We know that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and some legislators have blocked these efforts. Do you have any sense that Republicans are at least going to move off the dime somewhat in helping this effort to increase PFAS testing, sampling, monitoring, cleanup, and corporate accountability? I probably lost you on that last one.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so, because like mental health, when it comes to clean water, it doesn't matter if you're in a rural or urban area. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. You deserve and you need to drink water that is clean and clear from your tap. But we will see on that. We have opportunity here. The DNR board, we're going to have some new appointees in the Department of Natural Resources board. We'll see what we can do when it comes to making sure that the DNR can continue to move forward. As far as providing testing dollars, yes, I think that that can take place. Monitoring, I believe there could be additional resources there. Beyond that, we will see how far the Republican legislature wants to go.
You know, if nothing else, it could be a year to, you know, call Speaker Voss, call out his bluff, if that's what you want to call it, in that in 2019, 2020, this was pre-pandemic, and they talked about the year of clean water, and Speaker Voss, not wanting to be outdone by the governor, called for his own speaker's task force on clean water. They put together a good report, but then that legislature funded only a small percentage of the recommendations in that report, you would think, if nothing else, Democrats can continue to at least attempt to goad Republicans into saying, look, this is the speaker's own report. Let's put more resources into what his task force said needs to be done to keep water clean in Wisconsin.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly what we will be doing. We have been doing, we will be doing. The thing is this, is that, and you know this, Pat, and your listeners know this, all politics is local. And I'll tell you, when someone cannot go to their tap and get water that they feel safe to drink, that is very, very local. And they reach out to their local legislators. So, I mean, there are issues within their Republican caucus that they have to address. And that is why making a comment like dead on arrival, I mean, those are big, big, bold statements. And quite frankly, you know, we will see what happens here moving forward. Because what happened last night, Pat, was this, is the governor framed a debate. And he deframed the issues. He framed the issues about making sure that we provide resources back to our local units of government. He framed the debate when it comes to tax reform. We want to provide tax reform. This isn't going to be a giveaway through some type of flat tax that only goes to millionaires. And he also framed the debate when it comes to making sure that we keep our K through 12 public education strong in this state. I mean, that is an investment, the greatest investment we can have in our economy. He framed this debate last night. And for someone to come out and say that everything is dead on arrival, well, you and I both know, and so do your listeners, that that's not the case.
Well,
this
equally
debate has been framed.
Equally important toward framing, we focus so much on the Republican leader of the assembly, but the Republican leader of the state Senate, where you are, Devin Lemahue, his quote was, in spite of his claim to remain prudent with our expenditures, the governor seems intent to spend people's money to massively expand government. The projected surplus is not a slush fund. We need to work together to return these funds to provide tax relief, which I called out last hour on two fronts. First off, fiscal prudence. When you again cite fiscal prudence, what I hear from that side of the aisle is, well, when budgets are tight, when times are tough, we can't spend too much money. But now, with a budget surplus, and when times are good, we can't spend too much money.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. But what the governor did last night was something that, I really leaned back and thought, wow, he's going to send back 20%, 1 cent, 1 penny out of the 5 cent state sales tax. He's sending back to our local units of government to make sure that these local town governments and village governments have the resources that they need in order to make sure that our streets are safe with police protection, to make sure there's assistance when it comes to local road aids, to EMS assistance. That is very, very important. And these local units of government, these town governments, they've been asking for assistance. And to send back one-fifth of our state sales tax, that is a massive investment in our local governments as far as rural and urban. And what I mean by that is to make sure that we can continue to keep our communities, regardless of where someone lives, that we can, you know, have roads and bridges that are passable, that we can drive on, and that we can keep our community safe. The governor heard from the voters what they're looking for. And he responded last night, and he's really framing this debate.
And he did it in a way that, again, shows that effort toward bipartisanship that voters say they want, because this particular way of funding local governments is something that has been talked about on the Republican side of the aisle.
Right.
And last night, the Wisconsin Counties Association, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and the Wisconsin Towns Association all put out a statement that said, to see our state's top leaders work collaboratively to invest in our communities is unprecedented and will result in a stronger Wisconsin. They are encouraged that the governor is willing to look at what has been primarily a Republican idea and say, hey, let's work on this. My concern, of course, is that much like the Affordable Care Act started as a Republican think tank proposal, as soon as Democrats said, you know, why don't we go ahead and try that? And Republicans said, oh, no, now we hate the idea. I wonder how Republicans, if they're going to embrace this, or if because Evers is for it, now they're against it.
Right. Now they're going to move the goalpost. We will see. But I'll tell you, these local units of government, towns and counties, they'll speak up here because, again, we're talking about money back for shared revenue services, police protection, making sure our streets and our communities have what they need in order to people to stay safe. Pat, thank you for this.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And I want to add one quick thing here. When I talked to somebody in your office yesterday and hearing you just now, I know this sounds like I'm romanticizing the past, but I can clearly hear the echo that is unique to state capitol offices. And it warms my heart from having, you know, my old office there. When I hear that echo, it's just like, it's a cool place to work because you get to work for the people. You get to kick around good ideas. And we're thrilled that you are willing to do that with us.
Senator Redpath.
Hey, thank you.
Keep up good work.
You bet. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
When we come back, Jody Habish-Senekin, who is a candidate for state senate in the Milwaukee area, and former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski. And we will talk again about women and the need for more women in public service throughout Wisconsin at all levels of government.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
You don't own me. When Congress passed its omnibus bill in December, it was more than just a stopgap measure. There were also several healthcare initiatives that were placed in there as well, dealing with pandemic preparedness, Medicare benefits, Medicaid expansion, and mental health. And that's going to be the thrust of our discussion here with Senator Tammy Baldwin, along with the 50th anniversary of Roe, and things that she and at the federal level and Dr. Lyerly can help do at the state level to restore the healthcare rights from women that were ripped away last year in the Dobbs decision. And Senator Baldwin joins us now. Senator, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to join you.
It's wonderful to have you here. And we thought of you certainly on Tuesday night when Governor Evers gave his State of the State address and made specific mention of your own leadership role in helping with mental health care access, something even like the new 988 crisis hotline, where the amount of calls has skyrocketed, perhaps both because there are more issues, but also because of the simplicity and the publicity around it that you helped play a role in.
Yeah, I was pleased to pass the 988 Act. You know, there's long been phone numbers you can call in crisis, right? Suicide prevention lines, mental health crisis lines. Nobody memorizes a 10-digit number. And so oftentimes at the worst part of a crisis, it's just not utilized. And so I worked on this bipartisan legislation. We passed it a couple of years ago, and finally the phone number went live last July. And by the way, it's, I think, important to know, especially for young people who prefer to text than talk, you can text the 988 number and we'll get a response in kind. But we've seen, and I'm sure it relates to the pandemic and the isolation and disruption that people faced, trauma in many cases. We've seen a real uptick in folks who identify as feeling hopeless, feeling isolated, feeling depressed. And at the same time, the 988 number is getting used. And so in this recently passed funding bill for the federal government, we were able to really shore up and reinforce some of the services that back up the 988 line. You know, it's a hollow promise if you call and you can't get timely service. So,
oh, exactly.
Included additional funding for staffing that line, for connecting with local mental health nonprofits that can provide more localized service and support for those reaching out. And the follow through is really important.
Follow through is, and it's happening here. A Wisconsin public radio story tells us that callers in Wisconsin waited only 23 seconds for an answer and then spent on average more than 14 minutes talking to a counselor, which is pretty amazing when you consider that between August and December, 988 calls. There were 29,500 of them, a 66% jump in call volume compared to the same period in 2021. Senator, you and others knew that this is a crisis, like the governor said on Tuesday. This is burgeoning. It is silent, but it is serious.
Absolutely. And in my mind, 988 saved lives. It's as simple as that. And we have to back up the phone number with the support that people need. We know we have a shortage of mental health professionals. Related, and I know we're going to talk about it, but a shortage of professionals who are experts in the treatment of substance use disorder. And at a time when the data and the reality shows that the need is great, we need to focus in on making sure that that we have the professionals with the expertise.
You're so right. And I can tell you that as an OBGYN doctor, on January 23rd was 1, 2, 3, 4 Moms Day amongst my colleagues, which was all about maternal health awareness. And the two things that we're focusing on this year are cardiac issues and mental health. People do not understand what a giant burden mental health is and how it leads to other things, including death by suicide, people who are in abusive situations, and drug abuse. So let's talk a little bit about the support that you have been able to garner and to express in the opioid crisis.
Yeah, so we are seeing dramatic and horrifying numbers in terms of overdose deaths. Some of those may be deaths by suicide. It's hard. Many of them, though, frankly, with the introduction of fentanyl, which is many times more powerful than even heroin, it's a synthetic opioid. With the introduction of that, and sometimes people think that they're about to take, say, an Adderall pill, and yet it's laced with fentanyl and there's an overdose. So this is a struggle we have to fight from beginning to end. We have to up our actions in order to prevent fentanyl from getting into this country to begin with. We have to make sure that those who are seeking treatment can get treatment, not be put on a waiting list. It's very important that the treatment be there when somebody presents and wants it. And there are medication-assisted treatment that it can be quite effective with opioid addiction. And then sadly, we need to have wide deployment of the overdose reversal drugs.
That was in a separate legislation that you had proposed along with the State Yes. Opioid Response Grant Authorization Act. These were things that were folded into the omnibus bill for fiscal year 23. That's going to provide more than $1.5 billion for states and tribes to better combat this epidemic. You know, you have been a leader in trying to get these resources out.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think about naloxone and Narcan, the names of the overdose reversal drug, and how many lives could have been saved if it were more widely available. Currently, it needs to be prescribed. I would encourage, and have legislation to encourage people who prescribe opioids to co-prescribe the overdose reversal drug in case they got in the wrong hands or something like that. But then in places like college dormitories, where sadly we have lost Wisconsinites in college dormitories because they thought they were taking a drug to help them study better, and it ended up being largely fentanyl. Unless people have access to the reversal drug, it's not going to save lives. And so, you know, you'd have a fire extinguisher and a defibrillator in a public location like that, but not necessarily the overdose reversal drug. I've talked to moms who have lost their kids and are really pushing for that. And I support that effort.
The irony is not lost on folks that we are working harder than ever to help people who are affected by, you know, either opioid addiction or other mental health issues, while at the same time, we have politicians who are removing healthcare rights from people. We marked the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which was repealed last year. The U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra, toured the Midwest last weekend. Dr. Lyerly, you helped moderate a panel discussion on it. And Senator, you visited with the secretary at UWM as well to hear what the, you know, what is the Biden administration and what are you doing to maintain the fight to protect what fewer rights women have and hopefully restore them at some point?
Yeah. Well, you know, we have just convened in a new session. We're working to reintroduce the Women's Health Protection Act, a bill that I co-author with Senator Blumenthal. That would both codify Roe versus Wade at the national level, make it a part of our laws. But secondly, and I think very importantly in a state like Wisconsin, it would take the further step of saying states cannot pass laws that that erode the Roe versus Wade law. So we've seen in Wisconsin, well, first of all, we have the oldest criminal abortion statute in the country passed a year after statehood in 1849. But beyond that, in many more recent decades, the state legislature has really, encumbered access to abortion care in the state of Wisconsin prior to the Supreme Court obviously overturning it. And we know if we are going to restore that right statutorily at the federal level, we need to make sure that states don't then go and interfere. Now, at the same time, my Republican colleagues, many of them, are rushing to actually do to introduce a national abortion care ban, which would mean that, you know, not only would a state like Wisconsin that already has a criminal abortion ban, there'd be no access, but people would not be able to travel to, say, Illinois or Minnesota or other states where the care is still being provided.
It's just beyond my understanding how they think that this is what the people want and how they arbitrarily set a number as if it's an accounting class instead of people's lives that we're talking about. 15 weeks. Like, what does that even mean to them? Because to me, abortions performed after 15 weeks are often for desired pregnancies that have problems. So not only are these people suffering, but they're being re-traumatized by politicians interfering in the exam room. And I think that's the biggest travesty. I think we all need to know where our places are. We need to work together, but doctors and patients need to be making these decisions.
And you know, this has such real consequences. Dr. Lyerly, you talked about wanted pregnancies where something goes awry. I met with a young woman and her water broke at 18 weeks. And, they wouldn't immediately provide care for her that she needed, that would have been best practice and still is, but was made illegal by the Supreme Court. Not until she had a fever of 101 degrees was she able to get care. In other words, you know, there's still an exception for the life of the mother, and we're watching Wisconsin women have to go to that brink in order to get care. It's just horrible.
Where is that break? Like, tell me where that point right. is, because there's no warning light that comes on. It's just something that a doctor and the team and the patient need to be making those decisions. The DA does not at all have a place in those decisions.
That's right.
No. And so we have a state Supreme Court race coming up with, the conservative judge candidates, including Waukesha Judge Jennifer Doro, who told a right-wing talk show host this week why she thought the Dobbs decision was correct and why Roe v. Wade was incorrectly decided and needed to be repealed. So in the 15 seconds we have here, Senator, I know you can make a pitch for people to be sure to vote in the Supreme Court race this spring.
Absolutely. You know, we have a 7-member Supreme Court, and this is going to be a seat that will determine the outcome of incredibly crucial issues, including access to reproductive freedom for half of Wisconsin.
Right? Senator, thank you so much for all you do. It was great to visit with you today. We'll be back. You're up north. It was on this day, January 27th, 1998, the Dixie Chicks, now the Chicks, released their major label debut, Wide Open Spaces, the trio's first album with lead singer Natalie Maines, and still, I mean, an instant classic and probably a perpetual favorite of mine, Carolyn Fiddler. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Good, good. And that song resonates because it's about, a girl leaving her parents and going to live out on her own, to a place out west. And not long after that, one of my daughters did just that and, moved out to Idaho. And there was hardly a dry eye every time that song came on. But still an excellent album. And I got to admit, still kind of makes my blood boil over how their career was upended in 2003. But they seem to be at peace with it. They've moved into family life, parenthood. I think they're working on a project or something. Maybe.
Yeah, they've had albums out. Mm-hmm. Not too long ago, and they seem to have done well in my recollection. I don't follow them super closely, but I applaud their success because I agree they got a really raw deal back in the aughts.
Exactly. Let's see. I got a bunch of birthdays and things to go through. So why don't we, Aaron, play the song that topped the charts on this day in 2001, which would be a little Destiny's Child.
Yes.
Do you remember the movie soundtrack this was on?
Oh, yes. Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, I like that movie. It was
fun.
I didn't like any of the follow-ups, but that first one was just so campy and funny. And I
really leaned into it. Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Let's see. We're not playing a musical selection from Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, even though he was born on this day in 1756.
Thomas, I love Mozart.
Oh, do you really? Oh, see, now yeah. I'm sorry. Well, Aaron, don't let me forget. We're playing Mozart next week for the entire segment.
Okay, sounds good.
He's like, no.
As a music student who's had plenty of music theory classes, Mozart is not my favorite. But fair enough.
Okay. Well, then next week, just to be passive aggressive, he's just going to play Rock Me Amadeus over and over again. Thomas Edison got his patent for the light bulb this day in 1880. Ross Bagdasarian took the stage with the name David Seville and created Alvin and the Chipmunks. He was born on this day in 1919. Wow. And then one more music quiz for you, Carolyn. This is the birthday of G.E. Smith. He would be 71 years old today. Guitarist, songwriter, lead guitarist for what band?
The SNL stage band, right?
Oh, that's where everybody knows him from. But prior to that, he was and still is lead guitarist for Hall & Oates. So all of the Hall & Oates hits, that's him. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Next little tune comes from Stevie Wonder. This, of course, would be Superstition. It hit number one on this date in 1973. Also on this day in 1973, the Paris Peace Accords officially ended the Vietnam War. On this day in 1980, at the height of the Iran hostage crisis, the U.S. and Canadian governments worked together to help 6 American diplomats secretly escape the country in a caper later portrayed in a 2012 film. Do you remember the film? Did you see
Argo.
It? Argo. Yep. With John Goodman, Bryan Cranston, and of course, Alan Arkin, who tells a joke about Argo that we can't tell on the radio. But But that was the Best Picture Oscar winner that year. Next, let's play a little Camila Cabello, because she was top of the charts this day 5 years ago, celebrating the city where she was born. But as often happens, as we get closer to the present day on this day in history, stuff, I get to show off my old age. The note here says she went to number one this day in 2018, a little over a year after leaving Fifth Harmony. Today, I learned that Camila Cabello was in Fifth Harmony. Didn't know. Can't say I really
followed. I
don't
think I realized that either.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. So here we are. All right. And one last one here from this day in 1991. American troops had been fighting the Gulf War for about 10 days. It was Super Bowl Sunday, and Whitney Houston and the Florida Symphony Orchestra gave us this. So people ask, as I sacrilegiously talk over the national anthem here, what was it about it? Not just her voice, of course, but what made it? It was actually a top 20 hit when released as a single. Oh, wow. So I'll read here. Partly inspired by Marvin Gaye's 1983 version at the NBA All-Star Game, which is, again, iconic, Whitney's musical director and an arranger reworked the tune. Now, I don't know music theory. Aaron, feel free to jump in here, but this always catches me when I see it. They changed the harmonic structure of the Star Spangled Banner, a song normally done in 4/4 time, to 3/4 time, and then added a groove in the orchestra's percussion section with multiple chord changes. And I remember at the time people saying that that was, you know, like a travesty. You can't, you know, you have to do it this way. I still think it's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't realize that they'd mess with the arrangement like that, but it makes perfect sense because that song, it's very hard to sing, and like, yeah, there's a reason. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We remember her version for sure.
Aaron, from all those music classes, does this version strike a chord? strike a chord with you?
Well, I do have to say that it was actually changed from 3 to 4, not 4 to 3.
Okay. I probably copied that wrong, so that's on me.
That makes more sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If anything, yeah, like I know 3/4 time. That was this day in music history. We talked to, you know, Kia Vakil a little bit earlier about the debt ceiling fight. Not that much has happened this week, but the fact that there is still the showdown out there is itself news, because it means we're going to have to talk about the scenarios for the foreseeable future. Was there anything that you observed this week that told us that there's any resolution in sight to this, or do we still see something that is going to drag on through the winter and spring probably?
Oh, it's definitely going to drag on. It's going to be, you know, Groundhog Day is not going to be about whether or not we get more winter. It's going to be about how long we have to deal with this fight.
So it leads to this question, because again, Speaker McCarthy has a tenuous hold on that. It took 15 ballots to get there. He can only afford to lose, what, 4 votes? Mm-hmm. He can be a measure can be brought up by, what, a single member to hold a vote to kick him out. So then the question becomes, Which gets resolved for which of these things happens first, a debt ceiling resolution or a new Speaker of the House? I mean, Kevin McCarthy is the head of lettuce that they had the camera on during Liz Truss's very brief time as British Prime Minister.
I mean, it all depends on how much he values keeping that job over, you know, the fate of the national and world economy.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm not sure which he thinks is more important, to be honest.
He did say that he's 1,000% confident in his job security.
Well, anytime you're measuring something as 1,000%, I mean, clearly this math whiz should be trusted with the budget of the United States of America. So since we so often shortchange you by having some fun with you with the music, do you want to stick around for the next segment and we'll see what else you're working on these days?
Sure thing.
All right. We would appreciate that. Folks in Wisconsin Rapids, you're leaving us now, and you enjoy your morning show there, and everybody else will hear a little bit of news, get your weather update, and then we'll talk more headlines with Carolyn Fiddler right after this break. You're up north.